Tell me about your mom's shop, not so much in what she's already written in her book, but what it was like for you to grow up there.
It was kind of interesting, I guess. I guess I was in the sixth grade when she started her shop, or between the sixth and seventh grade. And originally she had the shop, downtown, right in that building where Doc Clark and Doc Ranney had their offices, in the basement there was a beauty shop, and she worked there with another lady for, I think, maybe just half a year. And then she hired some carpenter to, make the shop in her house. But I would go in the shop sometimes when would be there, and I can remember sometimes I'd hear him talking. I'd put my ear up to the there was only a little thin wall between the shop and the rest of the house, so if I put my ear up to the wall, I could hear everything they were talking. And sometimes I heard my name or something. I'd, try to hear what bad things some people were talking about me or something, So.
Certainly was an era where there weren't many single women role models around and or single moms, and I sometimes wonder, what that is like. And I think we've talked about the fact that people say that in a small town, well, everybody knows each other, but the truth is they don't really know each other. And you've mentioned the book Winesburg, Ohio, where the person writes about the details of people in that small town. I'm wondering, just from your perspective, what it was like to be the son, and were you the oldest son or the oldest child?
Barbara is older than me, and Richard's younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the middle child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I never, I guess of all my friends, now that I think about it, I really never thought of it, actually, but I was the only one that, I guess, didn't have a father at home. And of all the kids in our class, I guess I was. But I never even thought about it. I didn't, did I miss a father? I don't know. I guess my father left when I was about 5 years old, so I don't really remember him. So I didn't think anything about it. I mean, I was perfectly happy to. I mean, I think all our family was. We didn't have much money, but we were perfectly happy.
But there wasn't, any difficulties that your mother confronted being a single woman. Was she pretty well accepted?
Well, when you're that age, generally everything is for yourself. You don't, parents are there and so on to take care of you and so on. And, I mean, she was a single mother and woman that didn't have much money when my father never came back from the service. But so it had to be trying for her. But and she never really talked about it very much,
I know that when I was younger and looked at some people like Miss Markham or Miss Blewett or Miss Corsair, I didn't hold them in very high regard. But now that I'm older and wiser, I realize that these single women earn their way in life. Maybe some of them didn't have as high a reputation and regard as Miss Markham, but do you see your mom as being sort of ahead of her time?
I guess in contrast to these other women, these other women were older and they didn't have families, so I didn't really see any connection. You mentioned it right now. It's the first time I ever thought of any connection between, like, my mother as a single woman and these others, because, like I say, my mother had three kids, and she was, these other women were working too, of course, but I just didn't see any connection at all.
Forgetting about who you were as a kid and not comparing her to Miss Markham or the others, I mean, I assume you hold your mother in pretty high regard.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, she when my father never came back, she didn't have any money. Now her parents helped her out just a little bit, but she was kind of person that would never want to, say, take welfare or do nothing. She wanted to do something, so, and she made a big sacrifice. She left her kids for a year, and we were lucky enough that we all stayed with aunts and uncles for that year. my brother stayed with his with my mother's parents, and so she raised three kids and supported us, and you know, I really, you know, I admire everything she did, you know.
And that wasn't like she ran away for a year. That was like she, what did she do in that year?
Well, she went to Des Moines to beauty school, and that was a one-year program. And so she went to beauty school for 1 year, and my sister, my Barbara and myself stayed with aunts and uncles, and my brother, Richard, stayed with my mother's parents, my grandparents. And so my mother was lucky enough that she had brothers and sisters that would take our kids for a year, you know, take us for a year. And because we all had cousins, so it really wasn't, you know, me staying with one of my aunts and uncles. They had kids too, so it was just another kid around, you know. So, but nevertheless, it was a sacrifice my mother made, and from then on, she supported us, and we, you know, we weren't rich, but certainly a lot of people in those small towns like Roth weren't rich either, and I think we were just as happy as anyone, you know.
She had the beauty parlor across the street from the school, but tell me more about it.
She went to college 1 year, and then she got married. Somehow I kind of always thought she wished she would have, you know, continued on, but that was during the Depression. People didn't have much money and everything. And she's always done a lot of things. She's always done a lot of writing. She's a lot of crafts and so on. She's a... you know, I admire her. She's a very intelligent woman, you know. And somehow I think when she was a beauty operator, she felt that somehow occasionally she'd make a remark that I felt that she didn't feel she was being fulfilled by being a beauty operator. Not that there's anything wrong with being a beauty operator, but maybe that she wanted to be a psychologist, I remember, when she was real young, and she never did. And so maybe that's why she... I think her creative, you know, the fact that she is a creative person. I think she wanted to write those books and so on. And
you grew up there under her influence, and you've done some writing. I know you've done some travel writing, and you've done a few wonderful pieces for the Rolf website, and. How did you pick up an interest in writing? I mean, I had the impression that even though we had a good school and we had role models in literature like Miss Markham and others, that a lot of people have sort of picked up, I think, a fear of writing. But you seem to enjoy writing. How did you pick up that love of writing?
Certainly I never wrote any in high school or college. And even when I started teaching, but I guess one summer I just said, what can I do kind of creative? So I don't know why. I just said, well, why don't I just start writing some short stories, just kind of for the fun of it. So I spent the entire summer, but Susan did too, my wife, and we would write one story a week, a fiction, and just for the fun of it. We would read like Hemingway, and then we'd say, let's try to write using kind of his genre, you know, his style, so to speak. And then we get to read another short story writer, and we write in there. So we wrote for a whole summer, and we never sold anything. We sent them Reader's Digest, a lot of magazines, and so on. So then the next summer, I said, "Well, I got to change my genre." So, of course, I'd been teaching for about 10 years at this time. So I said I had a lot of notes. So I said, "Well, I'll take some of my notes and write a math textbook." So I did that, and I actually sold it then. And Susan then kind of, she started writing travel, and she started selling her stories to newspapers and magazines. I don't like, well, it's like you said one time, you like to throw mud on the page and then kind of start rewriting. Well, that's the same way as me. I don't like to write, but I just throw a bunch of words on the page, and then with my word processor, it's kind of a game, you see. You kind of turn words around, turn phrases around, and change words, and it just becomes a very challenging game to make it, you know, make exact words, exact phrases, and so on. And so I think it's the typing I like.
So you like being at that keyboard?
Oh, I love being at the keyboard. See, when I was in high school, Bill Kimden and myself, we had the worst penmanship in class, and Miss Markham always reminded us. And when I write or print, I write about a third grade level. It's terrible. But on a keyboard, I'm a terror. I type very fast, and I just love it. And so I think I can thank Miss Blewett for, you know, that was the best course I ever took in high school, Miss Blewett's typing class. If I didn't have my computer and word processor, I don't think I would write very much because I like to rewrite. And if you just do it on paper and pencil, it just becomes so messy. It's just a losing proposition, you know.
I can understand that, too. It really is nice to have word processing. When did you get your first computer? What was it like when you got your first computer?
My first personal computer?
Yeah.
1982, when the first PCs came out. And I got one, and I was writing a book at the time, and I was writing it with paper and pencil, and I would type it on my IBM Selectric. And then I got the computer, and I said, well, what I'll do is I'll write it in paper and pencil and then rewrite it on the word processor. But I did that for about 2 weeks, and after that I just wrote everything right from scratch, right on the computer, which, of course, is what everyone does now. And that was, I guess, 28 years ago now.
Back to this thing of living across the street from the school. You've had certain escapades?
Well, you know, our house, which was south of the school, was at one time east of the school where the gymnasium is now. There were two houses there that the school moved. Our house and another house, which is actually owned by the school, generally the band teacher and the coach lived in the house. And they moved that house right north of the school, about half a block. And then our house, they moved right south of the school. I can remember when we first moved in that house east of the school, where the gymnasium is, I got a BB gun. And the first thing I did was I was going to shoot a BB over there, shoot a BB over the school. But it didn't make it. It made it up to the second floor junior high school level and through one of those windows there. There was a tiny little hole. In fact, I went up in the school. It was sometime in the summer. I snuck up in the school and went in. There was a tiny hole there, but I don't think everyone ever found it, or maybe they did, but I never got caught for that in any way. But there are a lot of instances like that of living next to the school, climbing up on top of the school. That's which, of course, what all kids in the town did. You know, on summer night, you'd climb up there and hope to see old Mort come out of his house and look down upon him and, you know, tell him quiet, you know, and hope he doesn't look up and everything.
When they moved the houses, had those been where the gym is now?
That's right.
And so what was it like, what do you remember about the gym addition?
Well, when they moved, they started building the gym in the spring or summer of 1951. And that summer, I went up and worked for my uncle. It was between my 8th and 9th grade in high school up in Ayrshire, because we couldn't live in our house. And I don't know where my mother lived at the time when they moved the house, but I was gone that summer, so I didn't see them constructing it. All I know is when I came back in the fall, our house was south of the school, not east of the school. And I can remember, though, sometimes when it wasn't built and they didn't have the roof on, they were kind of playing over, you know, amongst all the construction equipment a little bit. I can remember thinking it was such a, you know, great, great, fantastic place, which, of course, it was at the time, you know.
You've written about some of your sports things, so you don't really need to write all about or tell all about them in this conversation, but...
When I was in junior and senior, probably Rolf was at the lowest ebb in the history of the school. When I was a senior in high school, our football team never won a game. In fact, we only scored one touchdown all fall, and that was against the Rams, and that was only because Bud Patterson recovered a fumble in the Lorenz end zone. In other words, he was the center. He scored more touchdowns than the entire Roth backfield did. So we were, I'm sure, without a doubt, the worst football team in the history of Roth. And I hated every second of it. I only weighed 110 pounds when I was a senior, and I was sore the whole the whole year.
You were in the some of those Mortensen films, like the you were on the track team, you were the relay team. What was it like for you to watch those old movies?
I guess it, you know, it was kind of like out of Happy Days, you know, that sitcom, you know, Ron Howard sitcom. And you're thinking, what a bunch of naive kids who all thought they were very cool and worldly and knew exactly nothing. And but you know, I don't look down upon that at all, you know. When I see kids today, and like my students, they're on the internet. They know more, so much more than we. Well, they know about certain things, you know. They don't know about certain. We know a lot of things that they didn't know, but they know things that we don't know. But I don't. I think we had a good childhood, even if being naive. There's nothing wrong with being a person that age being super naive and unworldly, you know.
Do you have any comments on the prom scenes?
Yeah, I guess, you know, Miss Markham was, she was in her glory helping those kids. And you could tell, I never realized this at the time, you know, that, but I could tell from those things, you know, she was smiling. She was, you know, she really, school was her life, you know. And you have to, whatever you thought of her, and I liked her and everything. I thought she'd be a good teacher and everything, but anytime you get a person who is that devoted and loves their work and dedicated, you gotta give them credit, you know.
You yourself are an educator.
Yeah.
And you are probably how old now?
73.
You're about the age Miss Markham retired, I suppose. I should look that up, but didn't just collect your.
I become Miss Markham.
I don't know. You don't stand up on your shoes like she does.
And kind of rock back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
When I started teaching at the University of Maine, I was 31 years old. And at that time, they would call me professor. And I would say, I don't care what you call you. I don't, you know, but I don't want to become, you know, like, you know, I'm a different age, and I'm not going to become friends with them. Well, friends, but not buddy, that type, you know. But as time goes on, I notice there's a difference in the way they treat me. When I got a little older, they kind of didn't treat me much like a buddy. But now I'm their grandparents' age, you see, and they treat me more like kind of like a grandfather, you see. The boys and girls, they call me my first name. They say, hi, Jerry. You know, hi, Jerry, you know.
We talked a little bit about writing. What's it like particularly for you when you get into coming up with some of your anecdotes about growing up in Rolfe?
Like I say, I think I had a Huckleberry Finn childhood, you know. My mother kind of let us do anything. Like, I want to go down the creek and play and wade in the creek or do stuff. You know, she was, you know, she's not like maybe some mothers. I can remember, I won't mention names, but I can remember some mothers that didn't let their kids, you know, very much more restrictive. It was, you know, I can think of, you know, once you start thinking about these things come back, you know, and be like any kid. And I think I was not very much, I was not any different from most of the kids I knew, you know, even my close friends, you know, and other kids. It was just like I say, right out of Happy Days. Most kids in town, I'm not speaking for country kids, because country kids had, you know, chores and their own things to do, but kids in town, or many of them, most of them, I think, had all kinds of jobs, you know, worked in the grocery store. I was a janitor in two places. I worked in a bakery, and I had paper routes, and I mowed lawns, and, you know, this is what you did, you know, and
some people worked on farms, and you were one
of
them.
Yeah. I worked one, I guess from about 8 years, I worked every summer on a farm almost.
For how long?
For about 8 years. All through my high school and college days, I worked on a farm, either for relatives, my aunt and uncle. I worked for Earl Ives, south of town, between my sophomore and junior year. The next year, I worked for Arlo Ives, a mile west of Earl's place. And I worked for Glide Brinkman for half a summer once. And I worked for Arlo another summer. And then the other summers I worked for relatives up in Ayrshire.
So you're sort of a town and country guy.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I loved working on a farm. I really, I always like to do, you know, I like to get sweaty and stuff, you know. So that didn't bother me at all. In fact, I thought it was almost a game. It's fun, you know.
So your class of 1955 is pretty close knit. Is that not correct?
Well, starting with we weren't until the internet came along, and then I made a web page for us about, I think it was 10 years ago, and put it on the Roth alumni page, and then we got everyone's email, and so I guess, not all of us, but I would say there's about 6 or 7 of us that are in contact. The others are not, and so some of us are, I guess. Not everyone has computers. And
you're a professor of math.
Yeah.
What inspired you to get involved in mathematics?
Well, actually, when I went to Iowa State, I majored in physics. And I guess I had in high school a course in physics. I don't know if it was called science or something. I don't know if you remember Richard Morris. Was he there when you were there?
No.
Anyway, he taught this course in nuclear physics. Somehow it got me real excited about physics. So then I went and asked Mort, should I go to Iowa State and study physics? And he said, no, you're not smart enough. Go to Morningside. So that made me go to Iowa State for sure. My academic advisor then, the one I respected most, was my good friend, Arlen Hansen, and he was going to Iowa State. He said, no, you don't want to go to Morningside. Go to Iowa State. But when Mort said, you're not smart enough to Iowa State, that sealed it for me right there.
That was Ralph Mortensen?
Yep.
How would you describe him?
Kind of ran a school like a military, I guess. A little too full of himself for my taste. And he shouldn't have been too full of himself because he certainly wasn't a scholar in any sense of the word. I don't. I guess maybe running a school, maybe you have to be kind of a. Because I was an adult then. I don't know how adults in the community thought of him, you know, mm-hmm. and the school, how the school board thought of him. Maybe he ran a very tight ship, and maybe that was good. I don't know.
When you were in high school, there weren't any opportunities for girls in sports. Were you aware of gender issues then?
No. Like I think I said in one of my stories, it was the girls' job to cheer for us boys, you know.
Yeah.
No, although I realized that Ayrshire had girls' basketball. That's where my mother grew up, and my mother played high school basketball in Curlew back in the 1920s and early 30s. And I just realized that they did and Roth didn't. And I guess if you would have asked me, I would have said, I guess it'd be nice if we did, you know. But I guess none of the girls that I knew of ever cared.
And, or at least they didn't say they cared.
Well, they probably didn't even think about it, you know.
Yeah.
If you would have asked them, I mean, when you get if you got a girl in high school and she never played any sport, then it's kind of it's difficult to play a sport that you've never done anything until you get that old. You got to kind of start when you're a little younger, you know.
Now, I've heard tell that the University of Maine has had some really good women's basketball teams and that you've played against some of those people.
Well, there was this one girl, not girl, sexist. I tell some of my students I call them girls because I'm older than their grandfather, so it's kind of, you know. But anyway, she, this one young lady, was an NCAA champ, scoring leader for 2 years in a row, 1996 and 7, and it would have been 3 years except she got injured. So she was an All-American, and she used to play with us. We have a faculty league. And we play every Tuesday and Thursday noon, and she used to play with us some, and she was a very nice. I still know her. She's the coach of the University of Maine's basketball team now, and which aren't any good actually now. But she used to play with us, and good friend. I like her.
Yeah, so you're still playing basketball. You know, what's interesting is there are some men, well, I suppose women too, who really were not athletic in grade school, junior high, and high school. I mean, you did go out for, well, you have your stories about baseball and track and field and stuff, but here you are in your 70s and playing basketball. And some of the people who are maybe hotshot athletes can't even walk anymore.
Yeah, well, think about, you know, that I have a theory about this. If you're good in something when you're young and you get older and you get lesser people that can beat you because they're young, a lot of people find that hard to take, you know what I mean? But if you're not any good when you're young, you have nothing to prove when you get old, you see? Plus, when you're a teacher like that, and all my, I'm with my students a lot, you know, you're your teacher, it kind of helps you to stay young because you're with people that are in their 18 to 22-year-old group, you see. And so a lot of times when I play basketball, I'm playing with my students, and although I can't keep up with them. I think they kind of admire me for going out on the basketball court and looking much inferior to everyone else out there, you see. Quite often, if you're a, quote, professor, you know, the way I'm up here and the students are down there, but when I'm on the basketball court, the tables are turned. I'm the lowest level thing, and they're all much better, you see. So I think they kind of, you know. But I wasn't any good when I was young. I just, for some reason, I just like playing. It's just fun.
What would you say to some other people, like if who are going to hear you on the Rolf alumni website about writing down some of their thoughts or memories?
Well, it would be good. I mean, I like to see because everyone, you know, I have no more stories than anyone else, you know, and everyone has a lot of kind of real funny, interesting stories. And I guess I focus on funny stories, maybe funny incidents. Somehow to me that's a little more interesting. But if a person really hasn't written a lot, maybe, you know, it's, you know, maybe a little more intimidating, you know. But that doesn't make any difference, you know. It would be nice to see more stories.
Did you go to movies? Did you see A Single Man?
No, I did.
I saw it last night. It was rather interesting on many levels, but one was that this the lead actor in it was a English professor. He had come from England, and then he taught at a small college in Southern California. But it was in the 60s. Seeing that, the 60s era from a 2010 perspective was rather interesting.
You think of yourself as a child of the 60s then, or 50s and 60s? Kind of, you're kind of happy between.
Well, I think more the 50s.
Yeah.
More the 50s.
Because Rolf didn't get, because I was gone in the 60s, but probably Rolf really didn't, it wasn't like some places in the 60s, like Berkeley, you know, which all this kind of student unrest, you know.
But like, I think I mentioned it earlier, like people will say, oh, the nice thing about small towns is everybody knows each other. And I don't think they really do. I mean, you may put a face with a name, but you don't know if there's been abuse at their home or if they couldn't go out for sports because they had to get home right after school to do chores or if four kids shared a bedroom.
Well, yeah, everyone knows each other on certain levels, but everyone, there are certain things that are private, and that's what actually I liked about that book, Waynesburg, Ohio, that it was about a small town, and although everyone knew each other, they really didn't know each other, at least on certain levels, you know. Everyone had their own, you know, we all have our own things that were, you know, we don't let out for the, you know, even to our best friends, you know.
And it was kind of interesting, if you see the movie A Single Man, there's a scene where he's talking to his class, and they've been studying a book by Aldous Huxley, and at some point he just closes the book and said, we're not going to talk about Aldous Huxley, and he just started talking about how everybody's oppressed in some way or another, and there's ways in which people are invisible. In his case, he was gay, and being gay in the 60s, even today, being gay is difficult. What do you think were some of the hidden things in Rolf that where people just couldn't be themselves?
Well, the sexuality, but I don't think people, it's not that they hit it, no one ever, I mean, it never entered my mind or anyone's mind about that, you know. We didn't even know anything about it. I guess there were certain words that were bandied about queer, although I understand now in the gay and lesbian committee, that's not considered a derogatory word, although maybe it depends on who says it, and I don't know, but there are certain words, you know, we heard, but I didn't know much about it. Really. I never thought about it. And one thing, you know, I really, you know, you say, well, living in a small town before TV, because we never had a TV in our family until I left for college. All through high school, we never had TV. And a lot of people didn't have TVs in the early 50s. And being in a completely Gentile area, no Jewish people, I didn't know about the Holocaust until I got to college. I think I was a senior, and somehow I picked up a new Sunday paper, and it said something about 6 million Jews were killed by the Nazis. And I said, whoa, you know, I didn't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm. You've traveled a lot, right?
Yeah, well, Susan's a travel writer, so... She gets an invitation a day to go somewhere, absolutely free. You know, and that's what travel writers do. They travel for nothing, and then write objective things, which are really disguised advertising. And then newspapers run them and say, well, all our stories are super objective. Although when Susan writes, she and I write travel stories too, but when we write, we don't put any form of advertising. In fact, when we write stories about some cruise line, in the sidebar at the end, we'll mention 10 cruise lines, so no one gets any more, you know, advertising than the others.
So when you're in all these different ports or on these different cruise ships, do you think about Rolf much?
I guess once in a while I think about, you know, from a kid who had to scrounge to get a nickel for an ice cream cone, and having the public relations person on a cruise line. When we were in Hong Kong once, the public relations for the Mandarin Hotel, which is a, you know, hoity-toity hotel, was giving us wine at, I forget now, $200 a bottle, and I was sitting there thinking, holy cow.
Dorothy Farlow's son from Rolf, Iowa.
I tell my mother that something like that, one of these places we went, and because the PR people treat travel writers like royalty. It's ridiculous. They put you in first class and everything. And my mother says, don't get carried away by this, you know.
Yeah. How's she doing?
She's fine. Next week she'll be 90. She'll be 94.
How's her voice? Do you think I could call her up and do an interview?
Sure. Her mind is the cortical part of the brain in terms of thinking, and she's perfect, you know. She'd been wanting to write a book on all the animals she's known, different, like when she's a girl, she had a pet chicken or something, and all farm kids have different experience of different animals and so on, and so she's kind of wanting to write about something like that, but she never gets around to it. I keep trying to convince her, got to write this book, you know.
Well, this has been fun. It'll be interesting to see if it works out technically. So,
you know,
it's been fun.
Yeah, it has.
Jerry
yeah.
Farlow, class of 55.
Yeah.
And
see ya.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.